Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
For now, we dive into our discussions all about Heights. You guys have been hearing about Heights for quite some time now. We've had season one, huge raving success. Now we have season two. And of course, the program comes up every Tuesday on Freedom 106.5 and on our sister station, Slam 100.5 FM. So, of course, joining us today in studio, we have some very special guests. We have, at this point, Joshua Simango. He's no stranger to us. He's always in the news, making the news, on the rude news that we read and that we look at on CNC3 and in the Guardian newspaper and so on. Of course, he's a journalist with more than 11 years experience, quite a young fella still, but still a lot of experience behind his name. He would have started at another media house. He's been here with us since 2020. He's also part of the investigative team, and he's the director of Heights. Good morning, Joshua. How are you today?
Morning. Pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, nice, just nice. It's one of the directors of Heights.
One of the directors. All right, great. And we also have a very special guest as well, that of Mr. Marcus Ramkisoon. And, of course, he is a research scientist by profession, and he has also undertaken graduate studies in chiropractic and acupuncture. In the United States, he's one of the most educated cannabis experts with the international industry, currently holding a post-baccalaureate certificate in regulatory affairs in cannabis control, a Master of Sciences degree in cannabis science and commerce, as well as over 70 accredited certifications for cannabis, inclusive of 56 CMEs. Those certification, AME approval and accreditation, and so on and so forth, as well as a number of industry certifications from various institutions, some of which are offered through his online school, the Caribbean Cannabis Institute. So that's pretty interesting, and we'll dive into our discussions with him as well. He's a registered cannabis consultant through his company, Canna Green Consultancy, and has worked with various legitimate dispensaries, cultivation and R&D. So very, very experienced, very brilliant young man as well with us. Good morning, Marcus. How are you today?
Good morning.
All right. Good morning. Great to have you with us as well. So we're here to talk about Heights. So Joshua, I think we could probably get started with you. What's the purpose? What's the genesis for Heights?
Well, basically, Heights is to provide a Caribbean platform for the discussion of Caribbean cannabis culture and the industry. Over the last few years, and Marcus is very familiar with this, the regional industry has been, I mean, some would say it starts a little slowly, but at least it's up and going. So there's that conversation and development taking place. But on a even bigger than that, perhaps, is Caribbean cannabis culture, because Caribbean is known all over the world for cannabis, from Jamaica straight down to TNT. And Caribbean people, some might not agree with it, but Caribbean people love cannabis.
Right.
And those discussions take place on a daily and sometimes an hourly or even by the minute. You know, there are WhatsApp groups for people just to speak about cannabis. So we want to be a platform for that discussion, and also a platform to help develop the regional industry to become, you know, a global player in this industry.
Right. Now, when we speak about the Caribbean cannabis culture, who formulate that to mean exactly, in terms of, like, you know, letting persons who may not be familiar with it at all, if you were to put a meaning behind that title, what would you say?
Sure.
And Marcus, you could probably join in there too, because you're the expert in the industry as well.
I'll let Joshua.
Okay.
This mic is on, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I'll let Joshua start, I think, and since he started with Heights, and tell us a little bit about what the Caribbean cannabis culture has been like so far on the show, because it's in its second season now.
Correct.
It's had a very successful first season, and there's a wide variety of guests. I mean, it's not just local or just regional. Heights has brought in guests from the international cannabis industry, and has gotten the what did I tell myself this morning? They've taken the perspective of the activist and put it into a format whereby it can now actually become something formidable, you know, something that persons within the industry regionally can listen to, because as you know, there are still a lot of issues within the regional industry. Yeah. I think the mic just came on there. Thanks a lot. Yes.
Yeah, and Mark, as Marcus said, we've had guests from up the region, international guests, and I mean, part of the appeal for some of the international big name guests to come is that Caribbean cannabis culture, because I mean, we could start with Rastafari, but the story doesn't necessarily start at Rastafari. It starts with the East Indian indentured laborers who came to the country and they brought cannabis with them. And that is part of the, I mean, that some would say that is beginning of the Caribbean cannabis story.
Yeah, exactly. Because there was, for those who didn't know the history completely, there was when the European settlers came in and the colonizers, if we call them that, they brought with them hemp. Because hemp was actually a very, very valuable commodity in those days. They used it to make rope and sails for the ships. And of course, it's only ships they're using back then, right? So it's an extremely valuable commodity. But the hemp that they were using is a type of cannabis, a variety of cannabis that was bred mainly for the fiber within the stock. So you would find these plants actually growing like small bamboo plants, if you will. You know, it's not flowery or Christmas tree shaped, and then they plant them all very close still up to today in places like Asia, Spain, all these places that grow hemp for commercial purposes. You plant cannabis very close together, you will not get the branching. You'll get a very thick main stalk, and that fibrous fiber within the stalk itself can be used to make all these things. But it is the East Indians, when they came in 1845 as indentured laborers, brought THC or strains of cannabis with less uses for hemp and more uses for food culture, for medicinal culture, and for spiritual culture. And their spiritual culture, actually, for those who don't know, there's a day every year within the Hindu calendar that cannabis is celebrated through the god Shiva. And it's celebrated even down here. Not everybody takes part in the cannabis aspect of it, but it is part of it. And that religion goes back older than, well, any that we have recorded history of.
Yeah. Correct.
So it is, he's correct. It didn't start with Rastafari, although Rastafari does play a very big role in the culture aspect of the Caribbean, right? Bob Marley, correct. Right? Coming out of the Rastafari religion and making songs that are attributed to Rastafari, and then their sacrament of using cannabis, their way of using cannabis as a sacrament. And that is, you know, his songs have actually, in my opinion, had one of the greatest impacts on the Caribbean cannabis culture as it is. People only know Jamaica and even the Caribbean because of Bob Marley when you go far out like Asia and all these places.
Right. Yeah. So what do you think is the potential for the Caribbean cannabis industry?
So we see in there's back in 2010, I want to start this way.
Sure.
Isolated CBD. CBD is one of the main constituents within cannabis. You know, there's two main cannabinoids, THC and CBD. There's 144 others, right? But they exist in much, much smaller amounts. So these are the main ones. And if extract these cannabinoids and you isolate them, you can get pure CBD, pure THC. Back in 2010, a kilogram of pure CBD on the international market was €120,000. All right. Today, it is $250. Why such a big drop? Because back in 2010, there was much less countries that had open legislation to allow for the cultivation of cannabis or hemp to be able to produce these isolates. One. Two, CBD only actually became much of a thing somewhere around 2007 or so with this documentary, 2008, with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, Weed One, with the young lady Charlotte, the baby who stopped
Charlotte
seizing.
Webb.
Right. And then that company actually made a ton of money from that, from their CBD and all that. So the dream came from back then. And when Jamaica started discussing it realistically in 2014, I spent a year in Jamaica with different companies there and trying to contribute. My work did end up getting contributed in the legislation, but I didn't get any accreditation for it. Small thing, at least the work went in. And, you know, they were influenced by
by foreigners who came to them and said back in 2014, 2013 and 2014, well, look, we could get a lot for this THC, CBD, cannabis if we export it. The market is ripe. The price is high. So the Caribbean countries and the governments, starting with Jamaica, started believing that export was the way. Now, as much as we are extremely small countries in terms of land size and land mass, and much larger countries like those in North Africa or those in South America could easily take over cultivation because of their space and lower cost of production and all that, the governments within the region still believe. Now, I'm speaking to you from a professional standpoint where I have worked with various governments and written the law, the proposed laws for cannabis regulations and laws. So I understand their perspective pretty intimately. And they're still actually stuck on this idea of exportation. Right. You hear it throughout, even when Trinidad government discusses cannabis. We've heard one of our big business leaders come out the other day, Mr. Aboud, and say that export is the way to go, and that we could produce a product like Jamaica or like St. Vincent that has a high quality for export. Now, talk about a well-qualified businessman speaking out of his field, right? It was a little embarrassing for us who understand the industry, because Jamaica, St. Vincent, Trinidad, within the Caribbean, the quality of the cannabis that is being produced outdoor is very low. Yeah, now, if we produce the same things indoor and we put a lot of time in it, yes, we may find something that has a high THCV, some one of the smaller cannabinoids or so, and that may be special, but that's rare. And they think that these islands are producing something special, and it's not. So now that the US has legalized hemp, all right, and hemp produces CBD, that is the main reason for CBD, the CBD price dropping to $250 a kilogram, because you can extract it from hemp. It's fully legal in the US, and it's worth more to plant tomatoes on your land in there than to plant hemp for CBD. So just to wrap up on that point, the governments, again, think about export, whereas that industry has disappeared. Many countries that were importers, Germany, Italy, Czech Republic, have now started their own cultivation campaigns to supply their own market, and the market has simply disappeared. If you look at the exports coming out of Jamaica and St. Vincent, they are very few far between and very little amounts, and the price that they're getting for it, $50 a pound. That again, you might as well plant something that food products that has a higher value, broccoli maybe.
So we missed the boat?
Yes and no. Yes, in the point of the export market, it's not as feasible as people think. It's not the golden goose as some people
but
like to think.
What about the whole, because I think that, you know, having a Caribbean brand or some sort of Caribbean linkage seems to be exotic. It seems to be appealing.
I think it was about more than a year ago when they had these COVID press conferences, I asked the Prime Minister, Dr. Keith Rowley, his thoughts on the potential of Trinidad cannabis, medicinal cannabis. And he was saying basically the same. He actually agreed with what Marcus was saying. He said he can't compete on scale with some of the bigger territories, because he said when he went to the likes of California, he would take a drive in the vehicles and he would see valleys of cannabis. And he couldn't believe the scale that they were growing to. But what he said is he believes there's an opportunity for a niche market. And this is what you were speaking about. And this is why we think the Caribbean cannabis culture might be a bigger pull, because there's this sort of, you know, the esteem and spiritual value of Rastafari and that sort of thing, and you can create this organic product that that people might be attracted to, because there's this discussion.
It has to include something a little extra.
Correct.
But how many products do you know from the region is exported internationally and is popular? You know, Jamaica has things like jerk seasoning. You go to England, you go to Europe, you go to America, you'll see jerk seasoning on the shelf, and you'll see jerk seasoning both from Jamaica and from companies within those countries, right?
True.
So, but how many Trinidad products have you seen on the shelf anywhere? Like, I mean, what, red mango maybe? Right? And that's not really, you know,
you can have the pepper sauces and that sort of thing.
So we have pepper sauce, right? And you actually don't see it everywhere. I am well popular. One of the reasons that I've made so many friends in the international industry and have become quite popular within the industry is because when I go to the conferences and the expos abroad, I take our hot sauce. Yeah. I travel sometimes with 3 gallons of hot sauce. Yeah. Right, and dry it out into little bottles. So yes, but there's so few products. So how many producers of cannabis or cannabis products within our region is actually going to get their goods out there to an international market.
Well, what do you think the issue might then be with marketing as opposed to the product themselves?
Yes, and that could be one of the major issues. But of course, any product has to be able to compete with both quality and price to be able to get out there, right? So outside of that, one of the main things is the domestic market.
Yeah. Right? So we'll get into the domestic market when we come back. Perfect. Right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
So we have in studio Joshua Simangal and, of course, Marcus Ramkisana. We were speaking about the industry, how it has evolved in a very short space of time. And we're speaking about the domestic side of things. You were getting to a point on that.
Well, just before I get to that point, let me just give some people the actual prices in the industry now. Sure. So that they'd have a realistic idea when they're thinking about getting into things. Because a lot of people on the ground also, it's not just governments, a lot of people on the ground locally that are interested in the cannabis industry are interested in export. That's their idea. We'll plant 10 acres and export it, and it's just not going to happen. The prices that you have to compete with in the industry, even if you can find the customers to import cannabis from this country when you're ready. The outdoor herb, as I said, you're seeing it in Jamaica and St. Vincent. The maximum amount they're getting, and that's some of them using greenhouses to get that also, is $50 a pound, right? That's a lot less than you can find it for on the illicit market in most of our countries in the region outside of St. Vincent and Jamaica. And the indoor, so you think, okay, I'll grow it indoor and I'll get a lot more, thousands for a pound. No. You're competing with Canada, which is as low as 50 cents per gram. That's 200 Canadian per pound. Huh. All right? Wow. So when you think, oh, I'm going to produce a lot and make a lot of money, that's the actual prices. So back to the domestic industry. Mm-hmm. That is where I, at least from my professional point of view, see the industry going in the region. I believe that government should look at, in as much as they would have licensees, applicants looking at export market, yes, they should also seek to ensure that the laws and the regulations they develop are well developed for the domestic industry to be established properly. Mm-hmm. And by properly, I mean being able to, because we have some problems in our primary legislation now that can be fixed by regulations. You don't want to see cannabis flowers being sold in a pharmacy, something that has a noxious smell, something that the customers or consumers for usually want to at least see or smell four or five different strains before they decide which one. You don't want to have that where children can enter, right? Mm-hmm. That's one big aspect. That was one of the main aspects I as a consultant had to consider in all the countries in the region when doing the laws, you know, the accessibility by children and keeping it away from persons underage. And if you allow for proper legislation for separate dispensaries, as is standard in the industry, then you not only create a separate space that is now child safe, because persons, only adults will be able to enter, but you've also created a big space for economic diversification. Yeah. Because now you've specialized certain places in this area. More people can apply for either specialized or non-specialized job in that aspect of the industry, as opposed to putting everything in a pharmacy, and all the well-established pharmacies will just get into it. What you're going to do? You're creating a lot more competition. There's way less room for people to get in the industry there. So a government has to think, in my opinion, about setting up a domestic industry, not just for licensing purposes and consumer purposes, meaning access by the consumer, but for citizens within the country to be able to access, especially in the type of situation we in today worldwide. Which may get worse with our coming U.S. recession. We should look at providing jobs and making sure that there's equity amongst citizens with availability for access to work and access to jobs. And this is one of the biggest points within the industry that could be created. Tourism is your second aspect. I mean, the only reason we've gone medical, for most who don't know, as opposed to non-medical adult use, which we know as recreational, is the international laws don't really allow it. They specify that you can only use for medical and scientific use. But those same international laws also prohibit personal cultivation, you know, cultivation without a government issued license. And there's no one or the other is not more detrimental than the other. So any country that has already allowed personal cultivation, let's use Canada as an example, can, like Canada, allow for recreational law and face no increased penalty from the international body. The penalty is a warning from the international body. They've said they won't go further for the medical use. But as I said, Canada has gone recreational, and a number of states within the U.S. that doesn't really apply, Canada does as a country. And they haven't faced any higher penalty from the international body. So I can tell you now that there are a couple countries within our region looking directly at recreational law. The British Virgin Islands are one of them within the region, and I can't tell you the other country because it's very close to us and they haven't announced it yet. But a country with recreational law will see more tourism than a country with medical law, obviously. Mm-hmm. Even in Jamaica now, there's a documentary that just came out on YouTube. I can't say which one, obviously, but they're showing you, and I called and confirmed, nearly all the medical dispensaries in Jamaica are not even bothering at this point with a prescription. You can literally walk in as a tourist and purchase. Okay. So they've gone undercover recreational, you know, non-policy, but it's happening.
Yeah, but even when I went to Jamaica a few years ago to try and get a sense of the industry, the policy, that recommendation policy, mm-hmm. was kind of, it was just like a facade in other ways. Right. Basically, you just have to go in and say, yeah, suffer from depression, anxiety, and somebody would say, well, okay, you could use the cannabis. So mm-hmm. basically, I think...
So just a word of mouth kind of...
Yeah, thing. I think basically, yeah. in relation to Marcus's point, I think in Jamaica, what they were trying to do is, I mean, it was just under the guise of a medicinal industry in some aspects of the industry.
It started that way. Yeah. For the first 2015, 2016, I can guarantee probably up to 17, but 2015 and 16, you needed a medical... In fact, really, realistically, up to 19, you know, when I went into the dispensaries, you had to sit for a minute, at least 5 minutes, with a nurse or a medical someone that they have at the dispensary and fill out your form there, state what's wrong with you and whatnot, and you get it quickly. So I think it's probably during the pandemic that they kind of let go of all things, but they haven't started back yet. So it's something that I think the government within the region should look at, that there's no increased penalty for going recreational at this point from what we can see to the country. Mm-hmm. Something that I promoted heavily against, mind you, right? Understanding the international law. I've advised countries not to go recreational because they can be penalized from the international body, but some years now down the line and seeing physically that the international body is not increasing that penalty, then my advice has changed. And maybe our region should look at recreational law immediately, which would bring more tourists, right? And there are ways of separating the medical aspect, meaning those products you can get a standardized dose from, not cannabis flower, not edibles. You can put that in a pharmacy. And those products you can't get that standardized dose from, that is, again, flowers and edibles. You put that in the specialized retail dispensary or retail sale point. And that way you've accomplished all the points I've made just now, which is economic diversification and so forth. And you've allowed for now a specialized place for these products where adults only can enter. So that's the direction that I think the governments should go for, the increase of the domestic market, or establishing the domestic market within the region. And you know what? When the very next Caribbean island goes recreational, which I again can promise they will, give 1 or 2 years and all the other Caribbean islands will realize, but wait, nothing's happening. Everybody cool, you know? I mean, it's just like when we decriminalized, you know, there were a lot of people, especially within some of the religious bodies in Trinidad, that came to the public consultations and said, oh my goodness, we're going to have weed everywhere. Everywhere you go, you're going to smell it. Has that been the case?
Right.
Of course not. So the fear and the stigma is being diminished bit by bit. And now we just have to get over this last hurdle of getting it, getting the law and the regulations done properly.
Okay. We got to take a break at this point in time. We'll continue our discussions when we come back. This is Freedom 106.5 FM.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
And welcome back, Freedom 106.5 FM. It's just about 8:05 in TNT. It's a good Tuesday morning to you. Hopefully you're where you're supposed to be at this point in time and not stuck in traffic. And we're discussing, of course, the program Heights. Season 2 is in full swing. And in studio at this point in time, we've got one of the hosts and directors of the show, Joshua Simangal, of course, from CNC3. And Mr. Marcus Ramkisun. We spoke quite a bit in terms of the industry, the international market, what it's like, and maybe where we should be heading to in terms of domestic side of things. Now, Joshua, in terms of this season, you want to give us some insight in terms of what exactly the listeners could look out for on the program. And of course, in a short while, we want to hear from you all callers. What are your thoughts on the cannabis industry? Maybe if you've got questions or concerns or maybe even suggestions, 627-3223, 625-2257. Joshua.
Yeah, so in the first season we focused more on a sort of, I guess, global and regional discussion. So in the first season we had the likes of US-based well-known medical doctor, Dr. Uma Dhanabalan, who's well-known in the medicinal cannabis industry. We had Dr. Rachel Knox, and we also had some regional players like Balram Vaswani, who's a pretty big name in Jamaica from the Kaya Herb House group. We had Douglas Gordon from Canex, who is basically the largest Caribbean cannabis expo, which brings together big global minds, global players to the Caribbean to have that discussion. And we also had our Minister Farisal Rawi. He was actually on last week too. So this season, what we're trying to do is we're trying to localize the discussion a little bit more to try and get into these conversations we're having with Marcus right now as to where the industry could go for us locally. We want to bring the business minds and the regional cannabis and some global cannabis minds together to try and shape and try and find that where we could capitalize as a region and local industry to push this and make this a global competitor on that scale.
Because Marcus spoke about tourism and we could use that as a revenue generator. Now, I've seen, following the pandemic and all of these things, we have seen the tourism sector kind of picking up a bit. We have seen a lot more cruise ships coming in. Do you think that could be a favorable option in terms of having some sort of maybe dispensary or the product available for use for persons on cruise ships that might be coming into our ports?
Yeah, for sure. I know that's, Marcus can confirm, I know that's a big focus in Jamaica, that cannabis tourism. Like, I think a lot of dispensaries focus their model on tourists in Jamaica. But when we asked Mr. Vaswani from Jamaica, from the Kyle Bowls, what he thought about Trinidad's chances with that, he was a little less optimistic because he said the numbers we draw in can't really compare to the likes of Jamaica in terms of the tourists in income or the flow of tourists into the country. But I think it's still an option. I mean, I'm not speaking necessarily from a position of expertise here, but when I think about it, when you think of Tobago, I think of Pigeon Point or something, that serene and beautiful view and setting. Think of if you have maybe you set aside a part in the beach for adults and you have an offering of some of the finest cannabis in the region. I'm sure that will be a pull to tourists, you know. Yeah. You take in the Tobago vibe and that sort of thing. Even maybe in Oaxacus, you never know. So I think that could be a pull for tourists, yeah.
I mean, we have Carnival, and as much as we may not have the lovely aquamarine waters of Tobago and the other islands within the region, again, Carnival is our big pull, and I think it could become a lot bigger for those individuals who may not know. If you're a cannabis consumer, usually you want to be able to at least every once in a while partake in your consumption when you're having fun in a social event. So Carnival with potentially, just as we have those beer vehicles and alcohol vehicles following the truck, and then we actually have the bathrooms and all that following the truck, we could have one of those enclosed filtered air caravans following the truck also, so you can step in a nice cool environment and consume your cannabis and then jump back out and join the band. And I think that would increase, it wouldn't serve to decrease, I think it would only serve to increase the number of tourists that would want to come to enjoy Carnival, now that that aspect and that demographic would now have a chance to partake legally while they're enjoying themselves.
So, of course, joining us, we have, of course, the other hosts of the program as well, to Otto Carrington, no stranger to us, yes, and Akia Thomas as well. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all today?
We are good this morning.
Good morning.
We just got the traffic blues. I really didn't realize that it's that bad sometimes in the morning, but we are here and we are grateful to be here, Kieran.
Indeed. Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. Yes, the traffic blues did hit us this morning, but we are here nevertheless.
So yes, we spoke about, Marcus would have spoken about the international market, and maybe export may not be the right fit at this point in time. Now, Mr. Thomas, as a brand specialist, I think this is right up your alley.
Yes.
because we speak, because I threw the idea about what about if we put some sort of, you know, because the Caribbean, especially for European persons, Americans, when they hear Caribbean, it's like, oh my God, wow, it's so exotic. Yes, and
certainly.
So, you know, all this allure about Caribbean stuff. Do you think we could capitalize or maybe even produce something at all using the, or taking advantage of our Caribbean branding or whatnot to really push the product, or will it still be difficult, or as our other guests as well to Joshua would have mentioned, maybe tourism, and Marcus also spoke about it too, Carnival could be an avenue that we could explore. What's your take as a brand specialist?
Oh, certainly, definitely we can, because the Caribbean is a special place in the world. When you talk about branding, you talk about perspective, you talk about perception, you talk about you know, your thoughts about something, your feelings, your emotions about a product. And the Caribbean resonates a sort of emotion of fun, relaxation, bold vibes, music, friendly people, you know, a customer that is customer service oriented, some islands that is. And if you can take the elements of that and certainly package that with an experience. And what is this experience? The experience is coming to the Caribbean to experience feeling a sense of quote unquote highness, with a sense of love and vibes and music and people, and creating the atmosphere for that. Certainly, that is a brand that can be marketed, that can be sold to the world. And definitely, I certainly see the returns on that. But the thing for me would be, if our citizens, and I'm speaking for Trinidad and Tobago in particular, right, if our citizens have the mindset now to take the shift, and right, to take the shift mentally that says, you know what, we are now a tourist focused island. We are now an island that is focusing on bringing in persons and individuals to enjoy our island. And let us shift that thought process, because we all know from Trinidad and Tobago, we do get the impression that we don't really like this whole sense of customer service, you know. We don't really like too much of, you know, being caring, so to speak. We are, but we don't come across that way as much as other islands do, because that's their bread and butter.
True.
But definitely the brand of the Caribbean can be marketed for specifically infusing cannabis into that. I think that's now a perfect mix.
You spoke about the mind shift then,
yeah,
right? In terms of our outlook, in terms of generating income.
Correct.
Now, Otto, you've been in the industry for a long time.
Over a decade.
And you've interacted with a lot of stories. What do you think in terms of the average citizen of Trinidad and Tobago, in terms of their mindset about the industry, and maybe in some of these stories that we see, any linkages in terms of behavior? I mean, crime is a big deal right now.
Of course, it is.
What's your take on it? Or what's the feel on the ground?
Well, for me, I mean, Heights has created a platform. I just want to make that clear, because we have created a platform for the conversation. And that's not just our local conversation, but a regional, international conversation. And thus far, I mean, just by seeing the comments that we get on social media and seeing some videos crossing 30,000, 40,000, we have grown in less than 3 weeks to nearly 1,800 followers and on different platforms. Come together, we have 5,000 just in 3 weeks. That says a lot. That says that people are interested in this, in what is happening, just for the euphoric aspect, the medicinal aspect, all the different aspects, but in the aspect of what can this do to benefit themselves or them or their organizations. So in regards to what we are seeing is that people, because of the cannabis control drug legislation being adjusted for the four plants, now you're seeing people looking into it. And the thing about it is that I cannot connect criminality too much to it, because we have people who are doctors, lawyers, professionals now actually delving into planting cannabis, getting more information. And the thing about it is that we cannot deny their pros and cons. We cannot deny their negatives and their positives. Right. And the reality is that crime is something that is socially integrated, right? Once there is a demand for something and there's a demand, and the demand is not, doesn't have the supply, you look at, and that could be jobs, that could be different, etc. You have a response, and the response comes in the way of various things like what we are seeing. So what we have done and what we have seen, because we are looking at models, what we're talking about, it has been done globally and regionally. Because we could talk, I can talk to about Jamaica. We talk to the players there. We talk to the players in Antigua. We talk to the players in St. Vincent, Barbados, St. Kitts and Nevis. We could, list goes on. And the thing about it is that what they have set up there has shown some level of success. Everything has pros and cons. Let's understand that. And because of where we are, I am seeing that there's a possibility of, if we, like for instance, we had Faris Alwari on the show last week, and he talked about the Cannabis Control Authority being in place in a few months, with regulations coming on. They do the regulatory aspects for the industry. What it does is that if we can create an industry, we create employment, we create downstream. So because we talking about crime here, crime is a social thing, right? So, and once you can create opportunities, for instance, I mean, let's put a perfect example here. We have we have someone who's in a particular high risk category, and in that high risk category, that individual is around cannabis, but sees the opportunity. Say, here what? Let me see if I can turn this into something, just like someone picking up straw to make a straw basket. Right. You know, so the thing about it is that creating new economies, all economies are regulated in some form or fashion. So creating new economies could literally fuel some change in the social structure. So for me, the connection can be economic, and the economic aspects can then be broken up into medicinal, tourism, stuff like that. So the rest of the world has been doing it, right? So I am very positive because of Heights creating a platform. It allows us the ability to now share and become the information center for cannabis related information and entertainment at some point for the Caribbean, and that is what it is. And we have seen the responses are very powerful. We have seen the responses from social media, and we are realizing that people are aware, people are interested, people are asking about license, and you know, and so the reality is, once the regulatory aspect happens, I'm very positive, sure that we're going to see some serious movement happening within the industry.
So
right?
we want to hear from our listeners. 627-3223, 625-2257. We'll take a couple calls when we come back. Actually, let's take one call before the break, and then we'll go to that. Hello, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm Govin. Good morning to Ranchi Stone, Otto, and Joshua, and the other guests. I can't remember the name right now. I had a last idea in terms of the guy would have said there, in terms of once it becomes, the regulations become in place, he will see some moving. What I am seeing is a careful consideration and a deliberate attempt to delay the process to get other big businesses to get involved in the cannabis, to do some studies and some research. And one would notably note last week with Co suggesting that they want to get into the industry. So it is a deliberate attempt in terms of my view. I listened to the Minister of Local Government, Honorable Minister, last week. He comes across as opaque, not clear and transparent. And I want to say this. I listened to Ranki Soon in the first episode, and Ranki Soon had raised some concerns. I want to find out from him after a year if those concerns are still, because basically what we are seeing here in terms of the delaying of the process, if you are still concerned, and I know he was suggesting that when the board comes into place, he was hoping that he will get on such. He's not sure. Of course, the government will have to make their pick. But in terms of looking at it, there's much talk about the industry. Yes, it can contribute significantly in terms of GDP or getting to help our non-energy sector, which is good. But when you look at the process in terms of the delaying, one has to ask the question if the small man is going to really, really benefit from the cannabis industry. And that is something that we seriously have to look at. I listen to the program. Sometimes I'm saying, oh, this is just fancier. But then again, too, we have to wait and see. 2 years, the minister suggesting, before the board and everything becomes operationalized. I just want to digress and say this. the procurement legislation was implemented since 2015. It was not centered on, fully assented until 2023. Okay. I am just wondering if the Cannabis Control Bill is similar to this.
Right.
Before I leave, I want to say this before I leave. In terms of, I just lost my train of thought yet. Oh, in terms of saying this, you have the legislation, you look at it, but nowhere. It will be, if you look at the minister and you say, it will be 3 years that persons in this country will have to purchase cannabis illegally, because there is no place in terms of where you can buy it legally.
Okay.
I'll just leave that. That is very comical and farcical in terms of my view.
Thanks for your call, Kadeem. Care to respond?
That caller raised some of the biggest questions for the local industry, realistically. And I want to thank him for the question, because it was a very, very intelligent question. I mean, I was also a little bit baffled by the Goodley Minister's response on the program last week. And yes, I agree with the caller. It wasn't as transparent or clear. I shouldn't say transparent, but as clear as it could have been. It was a little bit vague. And yes, caller, and for those listening, I still have those concerns that I did a year ago, because as I said on the program, I have no reason to mince words and be confidential about anything. There were international players back in 2019 seeking to engage in some level of monopoly or oligarchy system for this industry. I was approached and I refused them, and they offered quite a lot to put couple things within the legislation that could lead to a monopoly. And when I worked with the AG's office in 2019 to create the primary legislation and the 300 pages of subsidiary legislation, which are the regulations, as the former Attorney General proudly held up in Parliament in 2019 and said, here, we have the regulations, they're finished. They were. But it is true, the board of the authority has to make the regulation, so they will now use that document to formulate it. There has been a clause that has been entered into the primary legislation, which is the clause that all cultivators would have to send their products to the processors, and a processor will then be able to send it downstream. What happens if the authority or the government, let's say the authority is going to be in charge, decides to restrict those processor licenses to just a few? Then those international companies and some of those local players that do want a monopoly or oligarchy in the system would get it. It will be like cocoa and coffee and sugarcane, where we have a ton of growers getting a little bit for the crop, and the people who processing it and putting it in a bag making 10 times the amount. And that's something that I fought against within the region. So yes, I would like to use this opportunity in the first place here on Freedom 106.5 FM to announce again, now that the Goodley Minister has announced on Heights that the board is being convened, that I am very interested, because there's no way to apply. It's a cabinet appointed board. I am definitively the most qualified on paper in the region, academically and by experience, having written the laws and regulations for a number of countries in our region officially, have my work being used within the region unofficially, and therefore I can't think of anybody else to fill an interim CEO position on the board to create the regulations that I've already created, rather than, and I'm speaking directly in this case to the ministers and to the government and those who have to appoint the persons to the board, rather than appoint people to use my work and try to interpret it without any real conceptual understanding of it. Why not appoint the person? And I don't need a salary for the job. I've always done things for free. The 10 months that I worked under the AG's office, I know Joshua would know, I've not accepted a salary for that job, right? As much as they try to pay me, right? As public service to my country, I'm doing it free. But I would like the interim CEO position while the regulations are being created. Why I'm asking for that position is because that is the person that actually creates and crafts the regulations amongst the persons within the board. And I'm not asking to stay in that position. I'm using the word interim because I intend to step down after the regulations are complete, right? I don't have any interest in who's being licensed and when and all that stuff
I'm interested only in getting the right regulatory framework out there so we can have a properly established industry from day one without the potential for monopoly, as I've said, is still a big risk, right. Without the potential for having to go back again and again, like we've seen Jamaica do, like we've seen even St. Vincent doing to a level, to recreate and recraft laws, and without having to proclaim, as the former AG said in your program last week, one part before another. And then we establish the board now, and then a year later after the, plus the regulations were already complete. So putting myself as a position on the board to help craft those regulations would only speed up the process. Because if you take Trinidad's regulations, St. Vincent, Antigua, St. Kitts, and even Jamaica, you're using my original work from all those islands anyway. Right. Why not use the creator of the work? And I intend fully to apply to the ministers in person. I'll go to the next parliament on Friday, hopefully. I'm not sure when it is, but I intend to go to public viewing, and when it's finished, I'll meet up with the ministers and apply personally, because there's no formal way to apply to say send an application or anything. Okay. My CV is well-rounded, and I hope that I can fix the problem.
I took a couple minutes to read through, just a couple, this morning to introduce you.
I hope I can fix the problem. I did that purposely, my brother. I did purposely because I knew that when the time came, there would be foreign consultants that have business interest, again, monopoly and oligarchy, and I made sure that I would be the most qualified. And so said, so done. So hopefully, we'd get the right thing going.
And I just want to tie in Heights into this is, in addition to educating and entertaining, another important component of Heights is to ensure equity in the Caribbean market, right? Because this is an important discussion, as Marcus said. But there's a feeling, right or wrong, on the ground in Trinidad and many other Caribbean islands that this is going to be the latest industry, profitable industry, that is going to be dominated by a few. Sure. And we'll have the ground person left out. So that's another important conversation that we have on Heights. We want to make sure those questions are being asked. We want to make sure that there's a sense of equity in the market so that, we've gone through so many industries in this region, profitable industries that have ended up either going in a certain direction over time. Some would say it's a greed, a few people profiting at the expense of the wider population. We want to make sure that when this industry is up and running and profits are coming in, that this develops the entire region. In states in the United States, the cannabis industry props up the educational industry, the schools. They fund school programs. They fund the development of the infrastructure of schools. We have to make sure that when the funds come from this industry, it's to the betterment of the wider public. And yes, the fact is there are a lot of gangs that sell cannabis at the moment. Why is that? Because it's a highly in-demand product, something that Otto spoke about. If we could offer some of these young men who have very good business brains, even though they might be on the wrong side of the law currently, they have very good and astute business brains. They can go into marketing. They know what the market demands. If we can pull them onto the right side, that takes people away from the gangs and pulls them into a legitimate industry.
Business,
And we have to make sure, the part of Heights is to make sure that that opportunity exists, that these young men can have the opportunity to come into this market and do something better.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue with the discussions right here on Freedom 106.5 after these.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
So we're back, Freedom 106.5 FM. It is now 8:32 and a half. Well, this is the Morning Rumble. Satish is off today, so of course I'm here with you guys sitting in for Satish today, all the way until 12, so for the long haul. So we've got a question. Of course, we will open up the phone lines again. So phone lines are now live for your questions. 627-323, 625-2257. Call and ask and you will get your questions. Or even if you have comments to make, we could definitely facilitate those. We have a message, well, a question actually on WhatsApp, asking about the benefits of smoking ganja.
All right, so smoking, of course, of anything is not advisable, because once you combust a substance and inhale it, this is not vaporization I'm speaking about. This is actual smoking, like if you're lighting a cigarette or lighting a joint or so and inhaling. The chemicals that come with smoking of anything are very dangerous, and in fact, green cannabis, because usually cannabis is not dried, brown and old. Yes, some of them. But green cannabis, meaning cannabis that is dried and cured properly, you can still see the colors and all the trichromes and all that stuff. When that is combusted, you're burning and combusting and consuming the entire plant material, you actually get a lot more carcinogens from that material than you would from a cigarette. And I know this is a controversial statement in the cannabis activist arena, but it's true, and there have been studies to prove it. Think about it logically. If you burn a green leaf, you're going to see more tar than if you burnt a brown leaf, right? And that's exactly the whole thing. The tars that come out from the burning of the chlorophyll can be very carcinogenic. So smoking of anything is never advised. There are people who use smoking medicinally, and it is an accepted form to use medicinally in some places. It does work like that also. Mm-hmm. But vaporization is always going to be a healthier form of combustion.
Right.
Consumption.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just on the positive side, I mean, there are links to it, helping anxiety.
Yes.
Some forms of, I don't know if you could correct me, some people say it treats depression.
I didn't even finish the medical benefits part. Of course, any aspect of using it and consuming it would have medical benefits. However, right, and I hate to be devil's advocate here, but I have to be these days.
It is what it is.
Yeah,
it
you know, it's not a panacea, it's not a cure-all, right? First of all, it can affect positively a ton of different ailments, yes. But there can also be contraindications to use. There are certain conditions like schizophrenia, let's say. If you're diagnosed with such a condition, you don't want to be consuming THC. It will only aggravate your symptoms. There's no evidence THC working against
Dr.
it.
Dr. Uri Clement was saying that it's actually that the study showed that it pushes up the onset. Mm-hmm. It could speed up the onset of schizophrenic symptoms.
Schizophrenia usually occurs late in someone's life. I've well studied this when I was in pre-med. I take an extra time to learn about schizophrenia, so I'm speaking from a research perspective. Schizophrenia usually affects someone in the later stage of life, usually when they go through some extremely stressful event. Those who are predisposed to it, of course. You know, you might lose a loved one or something like this later in life, and that's when it actually activates. But yes, consumption of cannabis for those who are predisposed, I've seen symptoms activate as early as teens. You know, it's not the nicest thing,
like,
because
everything else is pros and cons. But I know for stress, a lot of people smoke cannabis for stress, and to be perfectly frank, I'm one of those mm-hmm. persons, and I can also say it helps a lot spiritually. For meditation, it helps clear, you know, a lot of, because of all the busy activity we have going on in our everyday lives. We have all these pullers and these noises in our mind. Cannabis can quiet the mind for some people. I'm saying some people, because everyone reacts differently.
Yeah. We got some calls coming in. Let's see who's with us. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Govin, calling from Arima. And your guest there. Now, I never indulge in narcotic smoking or whatever it is, but I did a hell of a lot of smoking otherwise, you know, the ordinary cigarettes and whatnot, and for quite a long time in my life. And I stopped it about 7-8 years ago, right? And one wonders whether it's cannabis or not, whether if you stop the habit, if it is reversible, if your health would improve, or if that remain as a stain, you know, like a white sheet and you have a stain and it cannot come out. I want to know if that would affect you for the rest of your life, right? That is the whole thing about it, because I know in early days, and it's still in the customs legislation, ganja, right? And the people used to use it, especially those who do in a meditation. But, you know, probably they were just using it wisely. So I just want to know is that if you have stopped, and let's say a number of years has passed, if that would affect you for the rest of your life, or it would cure the body itself. I thank you very much.
Okay. So basically, it depends on the age of onset when you start using it. This is why we've advocated for adult use only and not use by children unless it's absolutely necessary medicinally. And even within adults, the human brain is not fully developed until 25 years or until the person is 25 years old or after. And I mean, realistically, when you use before and even after that, drastic changes happen in your physical brain. You know, you find the gray matter decreasing it's actual decrease in size sometimes, and it actually draws in, squeezes in a little bit when you use cannabis. And unfortunately, the effects of those occurrences are not yet known. Whether they're very negative, whether they're positive in any way, mm-hmm. it's not yet known. But we can see when you do MRIs, and so you can see physical and physiological differences in the brain matter on use of cannabis. So yeah. I would say that, first of all, there's no evidence of permanent effects unless you've started using at a young age, in which case, yes, certain aspects of cognition can be affected, the way that you think, the way that you form thoughts, if you start very young and use frequently. But as an adult using, there are no permanent, you're right, if you have certain, if you're a smoker and it has effects on your throat or your lungs or anything like that, after some time those things can be reversed, the body will heal itself in that matter. So no, there is no permanent, because even brain cells, people say, okay, smoke, you lose brain cells, and brain cells can't be replaced. That's not exactly true. We've seen over the last decade or so a lot of research showing that, yes, you can regenerate neurons. So it happens. And that's not even with, you know, addition of, that's from your body's natural stem cells. And I've seen it with my own eyes through different research. So it's definitely plausible.
627-323-625-2257. Those are studio numbers for your calls right here on the discussion on the Morning Rumble. And we'll be right back after these messages with your quotes.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
And welcome back to the Morning Rumble. It's now 8:43. 627-323-625-2257. We're speaking about the program Heights. Of course, you could join us for Heights every Tuesday right here on Freedom 106.5 and our sister station Slam 100.5 FM as well. So we can definitely take some more calls. 627-323-625-2257. And we've got another call. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Govan and Michael. Michael, you made so much sense this morning. You're a very intelligent man. I don't think anything is going to happen with this cannabis authority until the election time is around the corner. Because what the Prime Minister and what Ms. Alwari and all the gang of the PNM will do is they'll use this as a baiting point or baiting to bait voters to vote for them, and they're going to fool us and tell us that this cannabis authority is going to come around. We have brick weed floating all over this country, crappy weed, people just selling, you know, unregulated, and that's what the government wants. They want chaos. And if you look at Vietnam, they're booming with Japanese people coming in, they're buying, and they're making money. So give us some comments. Michael, you have to speak the truth, eh? Speak the truth.
It's Marcus, not Michael, but thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Let's take another. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, Mr. Govan.
Morning, yeah. Morning.
The statement that the Prime Minister made at his Tokoloko function up there, the family day, you know, that I think that was seriously the inappropriate.
Okay. Well,
to go to a PNM.
Yeah, all right. I get the gist of it, but I hear what you all until 12, so you could call and talk about that later. We're trying to talk about Heights at this point in time.
So to spread the, might as well use the opportunity now, to spread the education, just like Heights is doing, right? And again, I think I put the sentence back together. Heights actually spreads education by highlighting the perspective of activism and advocacy through the region, you know, right. So and that is very important. There is an event coming up. It's called the Trinidad and Tobago Cannabis Conference, Expo and Growers Cup, an actual competition, an actual exposition and conference. It's scheduled to take place on December 19th to 23rd. As you know, those days are special to us. The decriminalization bill was passed on December 19, 2019, and was assented to on the 23rd. So we're looking to organize a proper event. You can find all information about it on the Instagram page for now, which is TT Cannabis Growers Cup. And we already have a couple sponsors from abroad that's interested to come down, you know, talk about the tourism aspect. Yes. I've already spoken to three individuals from abroad who said, listen, we come in.
You know, we want to see what this is about and what and whatnot. So it's something that I think could bring, just like Canex brings a lot of information to the region through their expo. I think we can have some local speakers, hopefully from government speakers and a couple foreign speakers, and it's scheduled to be a pretty good event. So look out for it, yeah. TT Cannabis Growers Cup on Instagram.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Hello?
I don't think we could hear you well in the car.
All right. Let's take another. Hello, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for such
a great, informational session. I have some concerns regarding Mr. Ramsey's comment about, working for free and now wanting the CEO position. You know, listening to him, I know that he has some bias against children's use of cannabis. And even that word cannabis is only, 20 years old. If we want, we should say ganja, marijuana, kush, there are more appropriate words. But I think that when he talks about and him being against children's use, the reality is that ganja was legalized in America for medicinal use because of children, because children needed that medicine. So there is a disconnect, I feel, Mr. Ramkissoon has from the ganja community, where it's not about the grassroots. And my question is, how does he plan to build a but how does he plan to elevate those who have been incarcerated for this herb? How does he plan to uplift the Rastafari community? And who else would he like to see sit up with him on the board of directors for the Cannabis Control Authority?
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's interesting. A good question. Interesting question, man. Just to clarify the caller's point, I don't think she heard us or heard me properly when I was making the statement. I am not against cannabis use by children. I'm against non-medical cannabis use by children, because again, a child's brain is developing. You wouldn't want a child to be using any form of intoxicant until that child is an adult, in my opinion. I'm not a parent, so I would assume parents would think the same, right? So and she made a point just now that I think I should clarify also, because we were discussing it here. The only reason I've mentioned the interim in between, don't intend to hold it forever. I don't want to see no who getting licensed or help anybody get licensed. Nothing like that. Right? I just want to make sure the regulation set to include everybody, which I'm getting to in a moment. But that's what the interim CEO does. As in reality, any position on the board, so that I can be in a position to prevent any potential monopoly or oligarchy from happening within the coming industry, is the most important thing to me. And it's what I've worked for the last decade and change for. Right? Of course, there should be persons that are qualified in cannabis sitting on the board. Board is usually established within the law, from what we've written for the other islands, to include members from different aspects of society. You have persons from the medical field, you have persons from the social field and so forth, even persons from drug intervention field, so that you can have a well-rounded view in the creation of a regulatory framework. Of course, the how to help and how to raise the individuals within the industry, as mentioned, such as those that were previously incarcerated, maybe those that don't have the economic status to get into the industry, because it is expensive. We didn't even discuss that yet, but I did discuss it on season one. It's expensive to get into. Is by social equity clauses, and none of the countries that have cannabis law have the social equity proposal that I have within my regulations and framework, and I'm actually using it within a paper thesis now for a degree. It's so simple, as opposed to many countries have social equity programs, which say, okay, if you were incarcerated, you can't afford it, you belong maybe to a religious group or so, you apply through this separate form and we will expedite your application. We might even give it to you for less of a cost than others or so. And that's all well and good. Problem is, it is a limited industry. You're not going to find a cannabis shop on every single corner like a bar, because then it's not going to be profitable for anybody.
True.
Right? Realistically. So, and you don't want too little
to have any level of monopoly or oligarchy. So there are excessive concentration clauses in the regulations, which basically state that, you know, in the initial stages of the industry, there can be one every 5 kilometers, one every 5,000 people, depending on the size of the country, population, all that. So it's evenly spaced. So you don't have an actual clause that prevents too little or too many, right? Now, the problem is for every one person that can afford to get into the industry that applies, there are probably 100 or more persons who cannot afford to get into the industry that wants to,
yes,
that wants to apply also. So rather than take, and this is the social equity plan, rather than take an expedited program to help one person at a time, right, maybe set a program whereby you can have 50 applicants, and then the authority, licensing authority, can group them according to location and so forth. And a group of 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever it is, can then be licensed together by the authority. The authority can help them, because you can't expect a simple small farmer today to become a CEO tomorrow. The authority can then help them to become educated within how to register their company, how to become equal sharing partners, so no one gets a bigger share of the other. And then they can either pool their resources, maybe they can get grants or zero interest loans from the government, maybe they can work towards pooling their own resources to get a loan. And then you're helping, for every one person who can afford to get into the industry, you're not just helping one who can't, you end up helping about 50 who can't put one license.
So you're looking at the long run and the longevity of
and
the
industry. And that's how you raise the people, because when you look at the actual physical evidence of what's happening, not even just in Jamaica, in the region, right, where all the poor farmers saying, look, we have a license that we paid $3,000 for, a lot of money for us, not a lot for other people, and now we don't have the 50,000 plus that is necessary to build an outdoor cultivation even, right? And that's the thing, because you have to do security and fencing and a lot of aspects within it. So they're stuck. So you don't want that. You want from the beginning not to have these problems and reinvent the wheel, like Jamaica say. You utilize seeing these problems and you fix it. Yeah. And that's what we aim to do.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling from Digger Martin. I'd like to find out the difference between CBD and THC. I heard about medical marijuana, and my doctor also said that it's the brain has receptors for it, and it does help if you use it.
Okay, so I want to also know
mm-hmm. what they make marijuana gummies from, if it's poisonous, if it's good to make you high.
That's an important question, actually. Yeah, important. Caller, thanks a lot. We only have a little bit of time left, so I want to just make
we
sure.
We could extend if you all want. My program is up next.
I don't mind. No. I have no issue.
Before Marcus, it depends on
what the callers want to hear. But before Marcus answers that
very important question, I just want to let the listening audience know that you can definitely follow Heights on our socials as well. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, LinkedIn. You can hear what on Spotify and on YouTube as well. That's Heights,
HIGHTTS.
Yeah, Heights. And check us out on our website as well, heights.com.
Yeah, some really good content and a lot more.
And the next episode is at 6 p.m. this evening.
Yeah, 6 p.m.
Right here on our sister station
on Freedom.
And we have this afternoon, just to add to Kia's, I mean, Marcus, still keep holy answer to the question there. Yes, we have Dr. Yuri Clement, the professor of pharmacology from UWE. We have All Mansions of Rastafari on today. And then we have local reggae superstar Jalifa. And we also have coming on Cheryl Murray
Powell
Esquire. She will be on as well, where we'll be talking about somebody. We'll be expanding what we are talking about here this morning. So, Marcus, I know that call will be listening and for that response. So, go ahead.
All right. So, that's an interesting question, because a lot of the physicians in the country may not feel inclined to discuss cannabis as of yet. All right. And I'm not saying anything about me into physicians. I'm not giving you medical advice. I'm giving you cannabis advice in terms of medicine, as you asked. THC is the within the cannabis plant, there are two main I'm trying to make this as short as possible. Two main cannabinoids, THC, CBD. THC is the intoxicating one that can get you high, if you will, and CBD cannot get you high. Both of them are very medicinal in nature and can work for sometimes the same and sometimes different ailments. The CBD can, again, depending on what medications you're on, and that's why you need to check with a doctor, especially if you're on any blood thinners specifically and a couple other things. There can be adverse consequences, nothing too serious, but it depends on the medication. Sometimes it can be. So that's why you must always seek the advice of the doctor first. The CBD is good for a number of things. Yes, it can even help you sleep for as little as that. But here's the thing. It's still, by law, by our current law, illegal in Trinidad. And it's still being sold, because this was happening even before the decriminalization law was in place, in certain pharmacies throughout Trinidad and Tobago. And those products are not checked by our Chemistry, Food and Drugs Division or Bureau of Standards. Those products come from the US, where CBD is still heavily unregulated. And therefore, just as a simple test was done in the US recently of 15 different products, small tests. And only two of them contain what it actually said it did. Some contain a lot of THC, some contain nothing at all. Some contain fungus and molds and things to get you sick. And those are the products that are being imported and put on the shelves in Trinidad and Tobago. Again, illegally sold over the counter. It should be sold, if it had to fulfill the law, behind the counter by a pharmacist, but it's over the counter. And therefore, some of the products you find some people saying, you know, I have great effects. And then even the same people saying, but I use this other brand and I have no effect. And that's because within the other brand is probably no CBD. Simply. Mm. So be careful. The gummies, same thing. Gummies are being made. They're not sold in pharmacies. They're being sold by local producers. No one is there to test. Now the local market has to develop, of course, whether it is under the regulations or in some level of illicit fashion. I understand that more than anybody, right? But the reason that I go to certain places to buy food, and I assume most of us go to certain places to buy food, is because we know that the person serving us that food and who's preparing that food has been inspected by a health department. The person has a food badge and has gone through the simple stuff of understanding bacteria and how it works and all that. And none of those things can be confirmed with the person's preparing gummies and i.e. edibles, right? There's some that I know have made people sick. Most, for the majority, are very good and work very well. Don't get me wrong, right? But there are some, because we don't know, and there's nobody there regulating that market, which is all the more reason why regulation needs to come faster and needs to come in a way. Because look, people thinking, just like the caller called just now and asked about my position with the board and all that stuff, if I want to. Right now, it's set where you'll have to pay a lot for a license just to make a brownie, you know. Whereas we could have set it up where if you want to make one product, you pay a little. If you want to make 10 products, you pay a lot. And we set it up because there are a lot of people doing edibles. Consider the local content directly when you're making regulations. Yeah.
Excellent point there. Okay, so on that note, we have another message coming in. Thank you for this most instructive program. The knowledge of Mr. Marcus is quite fantastic. And the research into the possibilities is even more enlightening. Thanks for your messages there. And
We also would like to, from Heights' position, we also want to encourage the discussion too as well for persons who are fearful of cannabis and for persons who are wondering what effect will this have on our society. How will the society be impacted, and not just from an economic position, but also from a behavioral position, from a position of love, of attitude, of behavior? How will the opening up of this particular industry, where we see the vast benefits from, then what are the downsides of it? And how do we then mitigate that? Are we putting in any structures in place for persons who become addicted? Are we creating any specific avenues for persons who want to seek help? You know, because as much as we open up the industry, we are also opening up an industry that is considered to be a drug. And therefore, it does have side effects for some persons. And right. How do we then create an environment to protect our citizens as well? And those are the discussions we want to encourage and have as well on Heights, and also simply in our country, because it's basically information.
Yeah. And of course, the next episode comes up at 6 again. Otto or Joshua, if you want to just reinforce what's on the agenda for this evening's episode.
Yes, and we have Dr. Yui Clement, who is a professor at UWE of pharmacology. So he's going to speak to, medicinal benefits of cannabis. And he's going to speak in detail about that because he's someone who's wanted to research that for some time. And he's done extensive research because he has colleagues in UWE Mona who would have been doing research for quite some time. We also have Cheryl Murray Powell, who's Esquire, who's a well-known attorney in Florida in the United States, who focuses specifically on agriculture and cannabis laws. So she's going to speak to the Caribbean laws in place and, of course, compare it to the United States own versions of laws. And we also have reggae artist Jalifa. She's going to speak from an entertainer's perspective, and she's going to speak from personal usage because she was a Rastafari. She was born into a Rastafari family, and that sort of love for reggae and Rastafari blossomed into a career. And we also have Bongo Grease of All Mansions of Rastafari. All Mansions of Rastafari is sort of the body that represents all the various mansions of Rastafarians in Trinidad and Tobago. And he's going to speak to what he would like to see. Actually, he wants to speak about youth usage and the need for educational programs in the country. So I think an important discussion because...
Yeah. That's the nicest part.
Yeah, and just to add to the All Mansions of Rastafari, I think he's still interim chairman.
Is he?
I'm not sure. But one of the key things that we are trying to do is because the legislation allows the 4 plants and 30 grams and stuff like that, what has happened is that because it's now in the aspects that you may not be charged or you can be more free, the conversation needs to happen. And what is happening is that Heights realize that there's a demand for the conversation to happen because now someone can walk with 30 grams and police wouldn't affect them or even a minor, someone who may be at risk of using cannabis. And so the reality is that we are trying to develop that data center to be able to allow for not just Trinidad and Tobago, because we have listeners, I mean, I ain't tooting my horn too much, but well, I say we have listeners as far as Jamaica, North America, Thailand, Europe. I mean, all the islands. We have had ministers and ministers of government from different countries in the region, you know, talking about their industry. So we are trying to become that data center so that people can be able to understand, you know, cannabis has its positives and cannabis has its negatives. And I know some people may not be totally in agreement with it, but yes, if you take too much of something, there's a negative effect, right? So the reality is that we are creating that data platform to allow for people to be able to access the information, understand the regulations. And Marcus here has given us a lot of information because he has worked with setting up a lot of industries in the region. So for me, right now, you know, Heights is about growing and sort of creating the balance in communication, the balance of information, and the balance of, so that even parents and people who may have medicinal problems, who may be questioning, you know, because some people may just think they can just go down the road and buy some weed, right, and think that they will be healed, mm-hmm. not understanding that there are structures and there are strategies that you have to put in place, because you might have an ailment that marijuana might be able to assist or help with, but it may not work on you because your body structure is different. So these are the things that we try to give out to the population so that it's not just I can get 30 grams and I go, and even the topics of importation, mm-hmm. the topics of when they planted, the wet weight, the dry weight of the plant, all those things are stuff that there are so many gray areas within the control that is also affecting many persons out there. But people are being arrested. You have 4 plants, but when the 4 plants starts to flower and dry into, you know what I mean, you have over 30 grams. Mm-hmm. So now you're up for being arrested. You know, so there's a lot of things, and the question is, marijuana is not, you cannot buy cannabis seeds, you cannot purchase marijuana because it's illegal, right? It's still illegal. So there's still so many gray areas within the legislation. So we are trying to educate people because people, yes, we decriminalize, I could walk with it, but there's high chances that you may think that you have the freedom to walk with it, but there's a high chance you could be arrested and charged, just as it is, as marijuana is illegal. Yeah.
So, of course, really insightful discussion, and we look forward to today's edition and episode coming up at 6 p.m. I want to thank Joshua Simangal for joining us, of course, Otto and
Kia,
Thomas and Marcus Ramkison. Marcus, your closing comments as we wrap up the discussion today.
Well, you know, there's a lot of potential in the industry. There's a lot of potential for tourism, medical. There's even potential for upcoming non-medical adult use recreational. As I said, we see it in other countries in the Caribbean very soon. I just hope that, you know, education is a very important aspect, and information, you know, the right information. There is a lot of misinformation out there about a lot of things, but especially cannabis. I think what I'd like to do even is especially because of the last caller for that question with CBD and THC, reiterate my phone number. I'm at 462-8870, 462-8870. You can contact me on WhatsApp, not directly because I might be busy. And, you know, I'm here to give as much advice to as many people as I can, so that you have a level of understanding. I do help a lot of people with the medical aspect and so on. You know what? There is a lot of confusion out there, right? And there is a lot of people thinking, just as Otto said just now, that, you know, something's wrong with me and I see online that cannabis helps this. Let me go buy a joint, or let me go buy 30 grams and sit and smoke it. And, you know, it's not even that the body might be different, which is one aspect. It's the method of intake. You know, right. Your condition may not call for smoking. And in actuality, smoking destroys most of, in all the forms of ingestion, smoking actually destroys most of the active elements. Vaporization is better. And edibles, you know, does something similar to smoking, but still it's healthier than, you know. So I just hope that the country would, the government would put the right measures in place. I again reiterate my position that I'd like to be a part of this board to oversee the regulations, since I've already completed them officially with the government. And you know, hopefully we'll see an all-inclusive industry that's welcoming to everyone, something that would encourage economic diversification as opposed to closing it down and putting it into already existing businesses, and something that would help the small farmer, those that can't afford to get into an industry like this, because every commercial product costs a lot of money to produce if you're going to make a product that's consumable. I really hope that you know, everything is put in place to include everybody, that everybody understands, that nobody spends their money widely to get into something that they really can't afford to. Uh-huh. And I hope the information is there. Hopefully this conference and expo we're about to do in December will bring some information. Let's hope. And Governor Gatino, thanks for having us. Thanks for extending your time with us and so forth.
Definitely. Yes, so, of course, guys, you can look out for Heights this evening right here on Freedom 106.5 at 6 o'clock. And, of course, on our sister station, Slam 100.5 FM. Thanks again, Joshua Simangal, also Carrington, Kia Thomas, and Marcus Ramkison for joining us today, telling us all about Heights. And we delve into a lot of the elements about the industry as well.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.